listener production.
The creators of this podcast would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which it is recorded. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are the first storytellers of this land. We pay respect to their elders, past, present, and emerging, as well as any Indigenous people who may be listening today.
Hello and welcome to TOEFOP with Friends. Everyone relax. That's what we say here at Everyone Relax. Everyone relax. This is TOEFOP with Friends. Tom Ballard's here. Tom Ballard is the friend.
Yeah.
TOEFOP with Friend.
I'm so relaxed.
Ballard.
Hello, Will.
Yeah, everyone relax.
Everyone relax,
chill out. Everyone relax.
There's nothing wrong happening in the world.
Well, look at you, Tom Ballard, having to bring in the world. We can't just have a nice time without Tom Ballard. Rolling in to bloody tell us what's wrong with the world.
Of myself.
Why can't you just let people have a good time? Why can't people just enjoy things, Tom, without you saying, oh, well, someone probably got exploited to make that. They should unionize, take away our iPhones. I'm Tom Ballard.
Because it's fun. It's called comedy, Will. Look it up, mate.
Old people are bad until I'm old.
I'm a landlord
all
now.
Your stuff.
I wrote a bit of stuff about how I'm a landlord. I've got a goddamn tenant and... I'm
it's
a living
to be
landlord.
A landlord.
It's really tough,
a
man.
Landlord. They're the toughest for living
Is that the
landlords.
Worst one? This one, my bit was. Yeah. It was about how Anthony Albanese's a landlord. Yeah. That's funny. Imagine being his tenant. That would be funny. Because his two rental properties are in his own electorate as well.
Yes.
So if Albanese's your landlord, he's your landlord, your local MP, and your Prime Minister.
Yes. So if you have a problem with your landlord, it's tough to write to your local MP about it.
Yeah, you can't take him to VCAT, I think. Yeah. He'll get AFP to shoot you in the face. And then I was, obviously landlords
are
evil.
I mean, technically he's living, does he live over at the lodge? What's it called? The Kirribilli House or whatever it's called? Or does he live just in the electorate still in the,
That's a very good
does
question.
He live at home? Or does he live across the water in the big house?
Yeah, what is the deal with
Kirribilli? Because, well, it's Kirribilli, isn't it?
Yes,
the lodge is in Canberra.
Lodge is in Canberra. Yes.
So I assume when he's in Canberra, he stays at the lodge. That probably makes sense.
Sure.
But when he's in Sydney, is he living at home? He does, doesn't he? Because there was that photo of him outside his... Or is he over... What's going on over at Kirribilli House?
Yeah. Read that out, maybe.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
You get a few tenants
in
there.
If he's not there, could he not be the ultimate landlord? Get some people in.
You think that he will privately get the revenue, the rental income from that?
He can put it up against the budget or something.
He's like negatively gearing Kirribilli House.
I mean, on behalf of the Australian taxpayers.
Fucking hell.
In a way, we're all landlords.
This is a good plan.
I mean, but if he's not using it, is he, like, this is, I guess, what I'm asking is he using Kirribilli House as a second home? In Sydney and living in his own home, or does he live in Kirribilli House and he has his own home that is like a second residency in Sydney? Like, what is the practicalities?
I reckon Jim Chalmers has looked into the best tax arrangements and whatever that is, they've gone with that to work it out. I assume that they use Kirribilli House to receive, you know, international guests when they're in Sydney.
So could it not then have a couple of tenants in between?
I think so.
Some people live there. Maybe the people who work it and keep it clean or whatever could have... You could just say to them, you know what, bring your families.
Yeah.
Why don't you bring your families and you live here and take care of the place for a little bit.
I think it's a really good idea.
Yeah.
God, we're solving problems here.
I mean, that's prime Sydney real estate. Okay, so you were saying, living landlords.
Get Turnbull in there.
You were getting lols from Lils, which I believe is the abbreviation of the living landlord. So,
as we all know, we're all familiar with that.
Yeah, the terminology of the Lils.
And then I was like, obviously landlords are evil parasites. Full disclosure, I'm a landlord. I'm one of the good ones. I've heard of myself as a land friend. But yes, there's sort of ended up being like, what's worse, finding out that your landlord is a prime minister or finding out that your landlord is your housemate and that the person that lives with you is also in control of your living situation, in that you can't do the same thing with other housemates. You can't leave like a passive aggressive note because the person's like, oh, interesting, rent increase, I reckon.
So, but surely that's a power dynamic that you would have to negotiate yourself internally as well, because
I hate it. Yeah.
Not only are you the living landlord, because as soon as something becomes your property, then you do want it to be looked after well. It's almost like this is where all these things start out in the first. You know what we need? Maybe some people in some uniforms to protect this place. That's what I would say from people who'd like to take it from me.
Yeah, I just...
Do you be both?
Yes, you can't really. Because if you're in a share house together, it's like, you know, obviously people have tensions with their fellow share houses, but there's no...
Hierarchy,
right, yes. You're all sort of on the same level and it's, you know, you against the property agent or you against the landlord or whatever. But now when I'm like, hey, actually my tenant slash housemate, Kevin, is a delightful man who's very nice and clean and wonderful. But if there are any issues that come up, I always feel like a little bit of a douchebag because hanging over a polite request is the threat of eviction and homelessness.
I mean, it just changes the power dynamic a little bit, some would argue.
Anyway, Kev, I'm off to go do my stand-up about socialism and how we should all be get along. Clean up the fucking kitchen, otherwise I'll kick you out into the street.
So I'm interested in, like, how life circumstance, because of course, like, just because you talk about something doesn't mean that, like, this is one of the most damaging arguments always, is the idea that participating in a society makes you incapable of criticizing that same society for,
certainly,
you know, but does it give you, it's interesting, I think, particularly with the, you know, as you know, Tom, as someone who currently has no houses.
What's your little joke about me you're doing now houseless. Out there on the road?
I did it once. Like, it went quite well, actually. It went well enough that I thought, could I make this part of the regular act? It was an improv line at the time, but it was about the fact that you now have more houses than me and it's millennials like you who are keeping hardworking Gen Xers like me out of the...
These crazy kids.
But I am interested in... Like, there's so much now. There was a Q&A episode in the week we were recording this where it was all about, like, you know, and renters and landlords, and it's all, everyone's now pitted against each other. And, you know, there are landlords who can't understand that they, because of course there are, you know, if you are talking about the idea that this system in itself is allowed to exist, there are people within that system who are trying to be, you know, considerate landlords, who are trying to, you know, do it in whatever the most socially responsible way is, or signed up to the idea of being a landlord when nobody had any follow-up questions about that. Like, you can see them going, I don't understand. Told me this was a bad thing when we started doing this, and now we're fully committed to being part of this, and we found out it's bad.
It's the Me Too movement for landlords. Yeah. They were like, oh, this is just normal, and now this is bad?
This is what everyone was doing.
Well, yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I'm not in no way... becoming a landlord. And I refuse to use that term because it makes me feel uncomfortable. But being in the position in which you're a homeowner and you've got to deal with interest rates, you're actually got to pay attention to those fucking boring conversations, all this kind of thing. I guess a greater appreciation for the insane economic system that we have and how housing fits into that and how we have a system in which people have understandably been sold the idea that economic security is tied up in owning property because, you know, real estate is an extremely good investment. It just keeps going up. And people will describe their property investment as a positive thing. That is, you know, I'm a self-funded retiree. My investment property allows me to take the strain off the public purse, you see, because that will self-fund my retirement. Of course, you're not self-funding. You're tenant-funded your retirement there. And I guess the appeal is to recognize the fact that a system in which the only way you can get a secure retirement is by exploiting renters for as much profit as possible to pay for your investment property is a pretty sick system. So I appreciate that. I appreciate the fact that, I mean, like, if I ever moved countries, for example, I guess that obviously I would have someone move into that apartment to live there to help me pay off the mortgage. Otherwise, I'd be a fool. And with the, you know, the inflation, of course, the repayments have gone through the roof. Anyway, this is all very boring. But yes, you get a greater insight into that. And even the Greens.
But that's the point. It turns you into a boring person.
I know.
Who has to, like, think about all these things. And then
there's got to be somewhere between when I lived in a share house and was going dumpster diving with my fucking vegan circus housemates and boring homeowner. There's got to be a sweet spot in the middle.
I mean, but this is more the problem. There isn't any sweet spot in between two things, isn't it? And as you said, how do you separate the system from the individual? Like, that, I think this is the more interesting. I know that what you're saying is that, yeah, if we get bogged down in details, it becomes, like, uninteresting. But I think that the thing that I am most interested in is how much blame we like put on the individuals, because you can now see these people who are like the people who consider themselves to be the good landlords, yeah. you know, who are genuinely shocked, but they're not the people who have the 200 homes or whatever. They're yeah. genuinely shocked that their holiday home or their rental or the thing that they thought that they were doing the right thing
yes.
is now considered not to be, and they can't quite get their head around that.
Mm.
And because what they're really suffering is that people have problems with the system in general and they're so angry with the system in general, but yes. the only person that we can really blame is the person in front of us right now, you, person yeah. with three houses.
Yes, and I think, yes, we should all reserve our ire for and our hatred and our fury for the system, for peak bodies like the Property Council and for the real estate industry representative lobby groups, really, that are invested in perpetuating the system and think that landlords are heroes, are housing providers, right? Like, they're clearly the evil, most evil, and there are obviously some examples of landlords who are terrible. But obviously, yes, there's a whole bunch of people. I think 90% or something of landlords only have one property. Mm-hmm. Most people do that. And as I say, most people have been incentivized to buy into that system because yes. of our cooked housing market and our housing system, and because we've bought into this neoliberal idea that you should self-fund your own retirement, that society shouldn't look after our elderly, and that your super's not going to be enough, the pension won't exist. And when I was researching my book, there was some crazy stat like, 55% of people now think that the pension isn't going to exist when they reach retirement,
wow.
right? Like, this is the fear that people have about eating cat food in a terrible nursing home when they're old. So, of course, you know, just accumulate as much wealth as you can possibly to make sure you're set up for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So I understand.
People go, the system is absolutely cooked.
Yes.
And I am not going to gain anything from being abstaining from this terrible game. I'm just going to fall further and further behind if I don't get involved.
Yes. And even good-hearted people who do worry about other people have no choice but to focus on their own individual security, because otherwise they're going to be fucked, right? So uh-huh. then you just focus on yourself and your family, which is very good for the Conservatives. Mm-hmm. Goes against everything that left-wing people believe. And it is relatively understandable. I mean, an evolution on this is like the Greens policy, for example. We all used to be like, abolish negative
hearing. Not a bloody Greens podcast, mate.
Not an official Greens Party podcast. If you're interested in that, though, go to seriousdanger.com. Seriousdangerpod.com. We used to say abolish negative gearing completely, this tax concession, but I think the policy now is to restrict it to one investment property to sort of cover, you know, these actual mum and dad investors or these people who have one investment property. So so you're allowed to do in negative gear your first investment property, but after that, no more. So that's a change in policy in recent years. So that's perhaps an evolution of the idea. But particularly, I mean, on Q&A, there was this one woman who was saying, I shouldn't have to feel guilty for yeah. owning properties in my case. Mm-hmm. We don't know how many properties yeah. she owned. Let's assume it's a couple.
Yeah.
And there are people who have literally 238 yes. investment properties. And so, I don't know, my compassion for people who have hurt feelings, who have uh-huh. multiple properties but have hurt feelings, is very limited. But I suppose, yes, the greater call is to try and get people to get angry at the system and not just at the average landlord.
People don't like to be made to feel bad about stuff.
No, that's true.
Like, in general, it's a terrible way to get people to change their mind on something is to make them feel bad about what they're doing.
Yes. Yes. That's true. But then it's also just renters venting on social media, because that's yeah. all they have. I mean, that's how weak, you know, we are. And there is... This is changing slightly, but, you know, renters and the Greens are trying to do something about this, and the cool renters' unions are trying to change this idea of renters thinking of themselves as sort of a class within society with a level of power, and that we could maybe organise and try and do something to it to win and to make yeah. their material circumstances better.
So how do you feel like that you've betrayed those people then and I become a
good.
Landlord, like into the landlord class, living landlord?
I'm really nice. I give them free internet.
Yeah, it's fine when you're the person.
Well, if every landlord
10
was like
years
me.
From now, you're in the audience on Q&A. I don't think I should
be made to feel guilty. I worked hard in the comedy minds to get where I am now.
My apartment block that
I used
now
to host
own.
This fucking show, and I spent that money on my four properties, and I'm proud. Nah, yeah, it's brutal, man.
You've just released a special.
Yeah.
Last year's show, It Is I.
Yes.
It Is I is the name of the special.
Yep.
Where'd you film that?
Filmed that at the Corner Hotel. in Melbourne, which is a very cool rock venue and has actually been
where
home.
Jack White wrote the iconic riff to Seven Nation Army at a sound check at the Corner Hotel where you recorded your...
You for real?
I believe so.
That's very cool. Well, yeah, I would put my comedy in that same kind of realm. That's where I did my joke about my boyfriend calling me gay. I think these were both great riffs.
Two of the great riffs.
Two of the great riffs of all time. Together at last.
Iconic riffs.
Yeah, actually, I felt it in the, in the walls. I thought, this is what Jack would want. Gay. yes, but Damien Power's special was filmed there. Yes. Nick Cody filmed his special there. Dirk Jaisinger filmed his special there on the same night. Yes, cool little rock venue, and it was a delight to do.
Is it a good like room to do comedy in?
I think so.
Okay, what does that mean?
What does that mean? I was very worried about the whole thing. I was worried about doing that show in Melbourne, having flogged it in Melbourne for the entire comedy festival. Getting people along there in December was a challenge. The people who did turn up were delightful and great, and I think the show was like, yeah, substantially stronger than it was in Melbourne anyway.
Okay.
So that was good. For filming stand-up, it's weird because it's got this giant pole in the middle. So shooting around that was a challenge. I broke a watch. I broke a microphone stand. There was noise from outside on the street, and we had to go tell them to please keep it down. Guys, please stop having fun. Tom Ballard is shooting a special here. But I was really proud with how it all ended up. And I'm delighted it's out in the world. One of the little clips, that one about my homophobic boyfriend, has just clicked over to 1.5 million views on Instagram, Will.
Okay. What does that mean?
I'm going to be huge.
Does it? Does that mean? That
the
doesn't,
Tonight Show's
that doesn't
calling.
Feel like enough views to me. 1.5 million doesn't seem like enough anymore.
That is depressing.
Like,
isn't
of
it?
All the people in the world. That isn't very many
Jesus
at all.
Jesus Christ, way to bring me down, bro.
Well, I mean, statistically, it's barely any.
You're not
views.
Even on social media. You don't know.
You could round it down to zero, basically, on world population. 1.5 million out of what, 9 billion?
3 stars.
Tom got a 3-star review today, and he's only brought it up 9 times off air. It said his show was perfect and then gave him 3 stars, which is fair. Look, I mean, it's fair to be outraged about the fact that, like, choose one or the other. It's either not perfect or...
Perfect balance of funny and mean. Yeah. 3 stars.
He knows the quote off by heart already. The review came out today. The quote is off by heart. He was not reading that off a phone or anything right then. That was... And by the way, the great news is people won't hear this for a fortnight. So you might have complete different... like views on this review. You might have got 5 5-star reviews by the time this comes out. And this moment, this captured in time.
All things will pass.
When someone from the dying age newspaper.
It's called me perfect.
Yeah, it called you perfect.
Oh, God.
Perfect. I mean, that's, in my opinion, the only way to handle a review like that is very simple. You take the word perfect. You put it in big letters on your poster.
Yes.
The age.
The age.
Perfect. The age. 2024. Perfect. That's.
See, there are quotes. And again, this is how sick the comedian's mind is, just reading reviews, what pull quotes going to use. Mm-hmm. There are pull quotes from the review, but if I see a quote from a paper without stars attached, I always think, hang on.
You do, but do other people?
Ordinary people.
But also, who cares?
No one cares.
No one cares anything about reviews.
No one cares about anything.
No one cares about anything.
This is great. This is a comment on my on a clip I post on social media.
Is this 1.5 million?
No, this is a different clip.
How many has this one got?
I don't know, 30,000 or something. Ooh. Boy. I mean, that's nothing, is it?
That's embarrassing compared to that.
Anything less than a million to me is a failure. Another hilarious ABC lefty comedian, ... Not. And that's from user carefactor_0.
Okay. Couldn't get carefactor0 there, could he? Someone had already taken that.
I think that's a line from a John Safran monologue during John Safran versus God.
Really?
It's burned into my head.
Carefactor0.
Just don't knock on my door. Yeah, he's talking about Mormons, I think.
Yeah, okay.
Carefactor0. It's just like to have carefactor0 and not in the same thing is like very 90s to me.
I mean, here's what I am interested in this idea of like, what do they think that, like, is it because you've worked at the ABC? Because it's not like you are currently.
What do roast? What is this? We're all friends.
Yeah, this is what friends do.
Yeah, that's true.
This is exactly what friends do.
Well, I have a bit of my
the
show.
The ultimate sign of friendship is like bullying. Like, that's true. Also, we're in the Triple M building. It rubs off a little bit. Sometimes when I'm in here, I just get a bit like, footy, you're dumb. You're dumb. Look at your haircut.
You're not even on
your
the ABC.
Shirt's dumb.
You're funny. Yeah. Not. I have a bit of my show where there's a news.com.
No, as someone who's one of the long line of ABC, yeah, unfunny lefty comedians, I feel like this is an area I can weigh in.
Of course. Yeah. You're the original ABC.
I don't think I'm the original, am I?
No, okay. Who's the original?
I mean, I've seen some people like ascribe all the problems about Australian comedy to me, but I don't think I have that power. I saw somebody go, Will Anderson ruined Australian comedy.
Holy shit. That's impressive.
I know.
Yes, in my show I talk about a news.com.au article which describes me as an ABC star, which I take issue with. They say ABC star Tom Bollard. And I say, well, that's not my name, and I'm not an ABC star. No. If I was an ABC star, I probably would have been fired from the ABC. And if I was a star, I wouldn't be struggling to get booked on Have You Been Paying Attention once after 11 fucking seasons.
I mean,
and we all have a good laugh.
But it is, like, I mean, that's just how ridiculous the media can be now. Like, there was a point where, like, somebody would go, we probably can't say this, right? But nobody cares anymore.
No one
cares. They just say whatever they want to say, whenever they want to say it. This is why I mean that, like, reviews and stuff don't matter as well. Because nobody, we live in this thing where we went through a period of time where we gave everybody the power to review things.
Yes.
I went and saw a show yesterday. I was having a lovely chat with the lady who was next to me. We were both just at a show, solo, and we were having a lovely just chat about life and, you know, in the break. It was a theatre show. We went to see the Groundhog Day, the musical.
Oh, yes.
And so I'm just having a chat to her about, like, and we were just talking about, you know, going to see shows and comedy and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about it at the end of the show and I was like, I really like that show. And he said, but if I had to review it, I would have to be so much more critical about the things, or at least justify, like, if I just like it, I can just go away and go, oh, that was good. I'm glad I went and saw that.
Yes.
But whereas if I have to review it, suddenly my eye's looking for what's wrong with it, or what didn't work, or like, why did this? And, like, I don't necessarily need to enjoy everything on that level. And I think that most people don't want to enjoy everything on that level.
No.
I think most people just want to get a feeling from something. And if that feeling is like the feeling they wanted from the thing, they're quite happy.
And we're so obsessed with it. You know, we work really hard on our shows and we're very invested in the success of the shows and how they feel. And then, of course, after the show, particularly if it's a new show, we want to talk to people about it. And most people are like, yeah, it was funny. You know what you're doing with comedy. I laughed. I walked out of the room and I'll never think about it again.
Yeah. Or one of the most frustrating things that people say to me is, it'll be good. It's always good. And you're like, oh, yeah, but...
You can do a real shit one on you just to let them appreciate.
I was like, I have.
you got to guess which one. Write in, listeners, with which one do you think was the bad one? Yeah, I mean, it's, and I don't see any alternative. Like, as artists, as comedians, we should care a lot about our show. We should work really hard at it and we should try and make it look natural on stage. But of course, there's a huge amount of work going into it. But we should be able to divorce ourselves from all the nonsense around it. And this is the thing that I keep coming back to, you know, every festival, this idea of buying into the nonsense of reviews and awards, when it should be about being in the room, doing a good show and having fun.
Yes. That's all it should be about.
Yeah, that's all it should be about.
But then, that's not to say that I haven't bought into the bullshit before, but I'm just... If I am here to preach anything, it is that none of that matters.
And
I think that the more shows you see as well, like that's why I do like to go and see shows, is because when you're sitting in an audience, you watch a show so differently to when you are the person doing the show. Like, you know, there'll be like nights where sometimes it's actually nice when the comedian's not being funny for a little bit because you want to get your water or whatever.
Yes.
Like, it's nice when they, like, you know, when you're on stage, you're like, oh, I haven't been funny for 15 seconds. Yeah. I don't think they like me anymore. And the audience is like, actually, this it was great that you weren't funny for a bit because I wanted to whisper to my friend or like adjust myself in my seat or whatever.
You need a little break. You learn a lot. I mean, I remember seeing James Acaster, who I think is one of the best stand-ups of all time. One of my favorite stand-ups.
Recently cancelled. You know who's cancelled today?
What?
No. That'd be great if just late news you didn't know. Actually, a really terrible person.
What?
Actually,
what, is corduroy is cultural appropriation?
He's actually an undercover cop.
Like, it was what? Whole,
yeah,
holy
that
shit.
Whole thing was like a, it was a double bluff.
Fuck.
So, yeah, he was pretending that he was pretending to be an undercover cop when he was actually an undercover cop. That's how deep it goes.
He killed Rowan Atkinson.
Yeah. yeah, late news. Rowan Atkinson died. I'm pretty sure it's James Acaster. He took that Ghostbusters money and he killed Mr. Bean.
I can't believe he's in the Ghostbusters in a movie.
And anyway. Kumail and Patton.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Anyway, I remember seeing him in Melbourne once, watching the show, and he was just killing and great. And then halfway through, he does the classic, what's going on? You guys suck. This,
yeah.
This is like, this is the hardest. This is really tough, this show. And I was like, no, James, you are doing great. And everyone here really likes you. And it was a great insight into the classic comedian, which I've done a million times.
I've done
you
it turn a
the show,
times.
You turn the gig into a bad gig because yes. You comment on the gig. And well, everyone's like, this is a lovely gig. What are you talking about?
I think we think that people are comparing everything.
Yes.
And that's not how you watch things either.
No. Nope.
Even when you go to watch a lot of things like I have this year, I'm not comparing Groundhog Day with Nina Oyama or whatever. Like, you know.
Okay, but if you had to choose.
Yeah.
If you had to choose.
Well, it just depends what mood you're in. Do you have an hour or do you have 3 hours? Do you have like.
She didn't sing once.
Do you have $40 or do you have like, you know, $300? Yeah. Or in my case, $0 for either. But, like.
Ticket to Groundhog Day?
Yeah, but I actually did pay to go and see Nina, so okay, that's you know,
that's good.
I figured one could handle it, and the other one, although I don't know. Like Groundhog Day was pretty full; it was a matinee, and it was
yeah, but they
it was full.
They, yeah, they have to like sell out every show to break even or whatever. But anyway,
yeah,
you've done enough to support the arts. Well, you get a free ticket to Groundhog Day.
I've played the Princess Theatre as well, which is ridiculous when you're sitting there watching Harry Potter or like I did a season at the Princess Theatre 1 year, which is like just, that's their one. I bet they look back at the history of the Princess Theatre and just go, what were we thinking?
Why would we possibly?
Yeah. I mean, ridiculous. Okay. So when you commit something to when you record your special, It Is I, did you ever do the show after that, or like, where did you record? Because, like, I know some people will like, there are comedians who will record the show and then still go on tour for another 3 months or whatever. And you know, while the show's being cut and edited and
they'll
keep doing the show.
Yep,
are you that sort of person, or once you record it, is that kind of that show done and the next thing?
Well, it wasn't a deliberate choice, really. It was just a matter of I needed to write this new show. I've certainly done that material, bits from that show.
Yeah.
But now that it's out in the world, I really feel like, yes, I want to try and not do that stuff. Although, you know, there are plenty of people who have not seen the special too, so that's also fine. But
and yeah, do you think that people care about that anymore? Because I think it used to be a thing with like the galas, for example, where
yes.
I always used to say to people, like, do something from last year's show because you don't want to ruin 5 minutes of this year's show when people like Who Saw You on the Gala come along and then you get to your best bit.
Yes.
And yeah, because it's your best bit of your show because you did it on the gala and then suddenly it doesn't work anymore because everyone saw it on the gala. Mm. I don't even know if that exists anymore, does it?
If everyone saw it on the gala,
we'd
be living at a very different comedy festival.
Yeah.
I feel a little bit of vibe in the room when I go, I did a bit in the gala this year from my show. When I get to that bit, I've changed, I've thrown in little bits and pieces so it's a new twist on it perhaps, or there are some different little flourishes or real little tangents, so it's not exactly the same, but they can double up a little bit. I mean, I guess you just think about the idea of if someone saw my special and really liked it and then saw me live and I was doing the same jokes, you might go a little bit like, no. I think, isn't there a Chris Rock quote of like, if you know, people see you do the same stuff twice in a row, then they'll be like, I've seen that comedian and I don't need to see him again. Whereas if every time you come back with, new shit, then they're like, this is someone who's going to constantly turn over new stuff and have new things to say. And I think that's key. I've got a little less precious about, you know, doing older stuff, and if a gig needs it, if I need it to break in some new stuff or whatever, that's fine. But I want to keep... Yeah, turning over new stuff and have new things to say. And I want my material to be reactive and to sort of be very, very present and reacted to the world. That's the dream.
Yeah, okay. So what is the kind of, when you start with what am I going to do this year? What is it that I want to like talk about? Where does it start from? Like, where does you, where do you get your comedy ideas from?
Let's shut it down. Next question. How do you remember it all?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you say heaps of stuff and I just am really impressed that you're able to say it all. It's brave.
I'm so glad that How Did You Remember It All exists, because it gives my mum something to say after she sees the show.
Oh, yeah. How do you remember
it all? How do you remember it all, Tom?
It's amazing.
It's funny. The last two shows sort of started in the same way, in that the last show, It Is I, the second half of that show is all about me ranting about the Queen's death and my thoughts about the monarchy and Australia's inability to change. And it started with a routine, right? I started writing new stuff the week the Queen died. A whole bunch of stuff came out and I tried to write as much as I could. And that was sort of the core routine. And I was sort of like, I think there's heaps there. I think I have a lot to say about the monarchy. So I'll start writing with that. And then one idea joins next to the other. And then eventually you've got heaps of shit. And then this year, really, I wrote a whole bunch of jokes as soon as the referendum result last year, the voice referendum result came in, which made me very, very sad. The Monday after that, I was in Cairns in far north Queensland and just basically let it all out and yelled out all the things that really frustrated me about that campaign and that moment and what it said about Australia.
So how do you approach something like that? Because obviously firstly, I've even noticed – And this is at my shows, like, you know, so left-wing ABC unfunny comedian,
yes.
Will Anderson, famous.
Who ruined comedy.
Famous ABC lefty Will Anderson who ruined comedy.
Yes.
Even things like the acknowledgement of country now, I feel like there's a different buzz in the room sometimes,
really?
Right? Like you can just, or maybe I'm picking it up more in the shows that I've gone to see that maybe aren't particularly pitched at like an audience that would be, yeah, naturally empathetic or sympathetic towards that at the best of times.
Mm.
But it feels like for some people, the referendum result was an endorsement of that it not just left things how they were before, but it empowered like a shift towards like being more dismissive of some of these things that had come along.
Yes.
So then when you decide like I'm going to talk about this, do you think, okay, well, my audience will want me to talk about this and it will be a space where I can talk about this? Or do you think I want like to write something that can, do you even think about engaging with anyone who voted no? Or do you just think, fuck the people who voted no. I'm going to write something that'll make the people who voted yes feel a bit better about, you know, their life and, you know, whatever. Like, I mean, do you understand what I mean? Because I don't think either of those is the wrong decision. Like, I think there's a world in which people go, oh, well, this will never appeal to the people that you criticize. And you're like, it's not meant to.
No.
It's just meant to be a bit of cheerleading for the people who are on the right side of it, right? Like, or a venting of their frustrations or an acknowledgement of, you know, what they might be feeling. It doesn't have to fix the issue. It doesn't have to recruit someone from the other side to believe something differently. It might just be that. What was it for you?
Yeah, I mean, like, if 39% of the Australian population came to my shows, I could make a perfectly good living out of that, so
you were like, that's fine, we'll just go, this will, you know, you're all gone now, at least I know where I'm concentrating on
weeding them out. I think, you know, going into it being like, okay, obviously I'm going to do shows when there are no voters in the crowd, and I've done gigs where there are vocal no voters. I did some gigs in Orange in country New South Wales where the gig was going great and then we got onto the voice stuff and then things got really tough and I had to do a lot of like backtracking and caveats, and that was really instructive to figure out exactly how to say all this. Because what I really sincerely feel is that obviously I don't think that 61% of this country are evil racists.
No.
But there were certain strains within the no campaign and certain reasons as to why people voted no that I think were dumb and wrong. And I want to say that without coming across as a, you know, moralizing, out of touch lefty, which is very hard to do. But I think that, you know, it's just valid. Just it's not elitist to say that making decisions based on ignorance is bad, or that we should try and learn things about other people's experience. Or I mean, the thing I really go after is this idea of if you don't know, vote no, which is a deeply cynical appeal that's come through lots of constitutional referendums throughout the history of this country. And it just appeals to the most base instinct, and it's a lie that was told by the No campaign, and a celebration of ignorance, really, and an anti-intellectual strain that just sort of says, don't learn anything about something that you don't know about. Just be scared of it and reject it and say no. And this idea that there was no information provided about the voice was a lie. It was just bullshit. It's never been easier to access information about this voice, and we got lots of information about it. And if you made the slightest amount of effort, and I understand it's very tough for lots of people, but the idea that that was being kept secret or wasn't real was just, it was just wrong. So, yes, I wanted to talk about that.
3 stars.
Fuck, okay, all right. Halfway through me talking, Will thought of that, all right? And he loaded up in a chamber, and I was getting nervous. I was like, what is he going to say when I finish the sentence? What is he going to shoot me in the face with? And he did it. He fucking did it. That was really funny, Will. Not! And look, the show is overwhelmingly for no vote, yes voters. Yes voters have come, and it is very cathartic, right?
Of course.
It is obviously...
It almost became one of those things you could not talk about at all immediately right. after it happened, because the majority had won and that meant that everyone else had to shush it about it and you couldn't complain. And like, they're like scoreboard, you know, the classic sort of like, you know, no, you we voted and you lost and so now you have to shut up.
Yeah, also this idea that the majority of Australia couldn't possibly be wrong. I'm like, well, I think Australia's made some wrong calls in the past, actually.
But the majority of, like, democracy, like, you know, is a wonderful thing and all those sort of things. Yeah. But, you know, like, the least worst system is, you know, like, that's all it is in every situation.
Yeah.
Like, you know, singing competition that's voted by the public. Like, yes. I mean, we can't trust people all the time.
Sure.
So, no, I understand.
But, yeah, there was a crazy moment. You remember when, like, Waleed Ali on the project sort of just pointed out the data, which was that, you know, yes, voters were overwhelmingly more educated or, like, had university, and I just mean that in terms of the level of education they'd attained, okay?
Yes.
Now, in no way am I saying if you don't have a uni degree, you're an idiot or you're dumb or you don't know stuff, all right? But I'm just sort of saying an engagement with a higher education was more prominent amongst yes voters.
And that's why the demonization of those sort of things, though, is obviously... This is the bigger structural thing that we're talking about, right? Which is, like you said, that you have to apologize for even the idea that saying learning about something is
good. Yes.
Like that knowing more about it is good.
Yes,
that,
heaven
like,
forbid.
Before you make a decision on something. I mean, speaking of Waleed Ali, I was on the project the night Dutton said, you know, if you don't know, vote no.
Right.
That, where that came, like they literally asked me about it on the show that night because it had been the first, you know, sort of thing that had been said in that regard.
Mm.
And they asked about it as an advertising thing. And I don't think this will happen, but I said on the project that night that I said, if I were the, you know, advertising agencies for the Greens or for the ALP, like really that would be what I would have been going into the next election with. Do you think that, you know, Peter Dutton can, you know, handle the economy if you don't know, vote no? Do you think that Peter Dutton voted against this for racist reasons if you don't know, vote no?
Right.
Like I would have weaponized that back in the other direction as something to go show how ridiculous and then make them argue against the concept themselves. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because if you turn it back on them, then they have to go, oh, well, hang on. No, but there's blah, blah, blah. And then suddenly the whole argument falls apart, right?
Mm.
But instead they tried, anyway, it's a very powerful weapon to know that if you just...
The fear of change, yes.
And if you can just bring things down. But that, of course, means that this then becomes the tactic every time we go into something.
Yes,
is people go, the most effective thing is going to be to sow disinformation to the point that people think, oh, I can't risk it.
You can't risk it, right. Yeah. And that would mean that a sitting Labor government would be campaigning on the idea that it would be worse with the other guys, as opposed to outlining any kind of positive vision as to what they would do with the second term. Which, and I know I'm a naive little bleeding heart, but that is supposed to be the idea, right? An election, you say, this is the things that we want to do.
It's
rather
the idea
than just saying, don't change things because it'll be worse with these assholes. Look at how terrible they are. Rather than actually providing any kind of alternative vision for what you want to do with the power that you have.
I don't know if you know this, Tom, but Bill Shorten took a policy to the election.
Excuse me, I'm going to go kill myself.
I don't think you're allowed to say that. Point out for the broadcasting reasons. That
I'm alive myself.
Tom is, I think that's better. That's fine. Yeah, that's
Sorry.
If you could just say unalive, we'll drop that in post. It'll be fine. Tom Ballard is fine.
Yes, I'm fine. I'm fine. I shouldn't be so cavalier about
that. We now have to put all the, you know, numbers in the fucking show links.
Yeah.
Tom. I know what you mean, though. Like, I mean, of course.
Yes, just this idea.
So what happens, though? Are we beyond the point where this is ever good again?
Great question. I'll fill this one.
Yeah.
No. No.
Are you sure?
Good things can still happen.
Can they?
They must do,
for
surely.
Democracy and stuff, you mean?
Yeah, for democracy and that.
I mean, the it's Greens, hard, okay. I mean, you, like, look, you know, I know, I joked, but you do a podcast. It's called Serious Danger. Mm-hmm. It's not an official Greens Party podcast.
Yes, thank you.
But, you know, a lot of fucking, you know, blah, 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 the Greens. They're great, to sum it up. And
Yes, show based around the energy that's coming, primarily. I mean, the Greens generally. Yes. We like Adam Bandt in other states, but primarily my co-host is in Brisbane, in Queensland, yes, where there is this energy. Well, the you know, young, class-based politics, people who are pretty openly democratic socialists, you know, the people that are what the Labor Party likes to think it is, but of course it isn't because it's basically a centre-to-centre-right party now, trying to do something about left-wing, you know, trying to make a left-wing populist appeal, you know, tax the rich, fund services for everybody else, try and push back against the excesses of neoliberal capitalism.
But you're saying these are things that the Labor Party would traditionally do but aren't doing.
It's what they're supposed to do.
Is that what they're supposed to do? What? Well, I heard from the Labor Party that the Greens are actually the problem, not the solution.
Oh, I must be mistaken. I'll look into that. Okay, that's an interesting
approach. Because I've heard from them that they say that. I've heard the Greens are the problem.
According to Labor, either Greens are far too left-wing and extremist, or they're actually secret Tories.
Both of those things,
yes.
I've heard.
And they should just
And they are both compelling arguments, because I don't like either of those people.
And even though they got elected and won seats and are in Parliament and have the balance of power, they should just do whatever the Labor Party says. But they do, you see.
Oh.
See, voting for the Greens doesn't do anything, and they have no power, but also it's the Greens that are blocking everything.
Well, this is what I mean about these Schrodinger's Greens, that we don't know what they are. Can't trust them. Can't pin them down, Tom. They're nothing or everything all at once.
And I tell you, and you know, to get actually serious at this
point.
But
it's good that they are the natural enemies of each other, the two supposedly left parties in this country.
Well, what else? Yes, can't they just get along? There was actually, we talked about an opinion piece recently, this idea, this guy after the Brisbane City Council elections was like, the GLP is coming. At one point, Greens and Labor will form the Green Labor Party. To like the coalition, and that'll be the future.
I mean, it would make a lot of sense if, apart from all the reasons that it won't, because like clearly I'm never going to be able to work together. But like, if you were starting from scratch,
sure,
in a system in which the Liberal Party have an alliance with the National Party in order to like form a government,
yes,
you could see a similar thing between like supposedly the two, you know,
right,
left parties in Australia. That like on paper. Makes a lot of sense without the whole, oh no, they hate each other and they're never going to work together.
Get along, yeah. Which is, I don't know, actually a formal coalition is very different to me to just like being in minority government, right? Which we're not even there yet, right? Labor loses its mind at the concept that they might have to work with Greens and like be forced into that position through a minority government, then going the step further.
But then you have to negotiate with people, Tom.
Yeah, heaven forbid. I mean, I really... At the moment, and again, this is not going to be good for comedy, but the people on the Labor left who are silent on what this Labor government is doing when it comes to Gaza is just disgraceful. It's like, I don't know how they sleep at night, and they should be fucking ashamed of themselves. And this idea that they have to keep quiet because there's nothing that Australia can do, or that they're all doing their best and stop screaming genocide at it. Like really a level of partisan Labor brain that has brought these people to the point in which they cannot... call out a genocide that is happening before them right now and actually have some basic decency and look at what's happening and criticize the party that they love because of the terrible job they're doing right now. To me, it's like, it's beyond the kind of funny or Greens Labor beef. And it's just like, nah, fuck you, man. I don't know how you can consider yourself left wing and be silent or try and make excuses for what this Labor government is doing on this particular conflict.
Yeah, look, I mean, that wasn't great for comedy. You're right. I mean, you were right. Two stars.
Two stars. Oh, shit. I'm losing them now. Oh, God.
It is interesting how, I mean, so obviously like a lot of the information I get around, I mean, I get a lot, you know, it's very complicated to understand what's going on anywhere at any time in pretty much any issue. Yes. And it is, I think, a lot of the time for most people, if something messy is happening somewhere else, it is very easy to just like tune it out as a general malaise of like, I'm not actively involved in this. I don't understand. I don't really understand the complexities of it. But that's different to what a government response is, I think. And in fact, if anything, it's in moments like this that I think that people genuinely look to their governments for leadership. They go, what is our country's position on this thing?
Yeah.
That is kind of, I guess, what I'm going to also have my position on this thing because that's kind of, I don't know enough about it or it's too complicated.
Yep.
And I reckon if I, this is, I think, what I wanted to get to is like, if you're only consuming the mainstream media in Australia, obviously I work with Jan Fran very closely and like she's been incredibly like vocal around like her journalism and like, you know, summary of like what the media's been doing, you know, around this issue and you know, incredibly passionate and I think also to be admired for her sort of often, you know, compassion, but intelligence, impartiality, the fact that she can still present in a way that is, you know, if anyone who does not understand, wants to understand and does not understand, like I think looking at what Jan does in this space is a really good place to start because she does try to approach it genuinely with curiosity and openness, but she also, you know, cares, you know, deeply and passionately and those sort of things. But I think she balances it really well and does it in an environment where people who are doing things like that are dissuaded from doing those sort of things.
Yeah.
It's not a great career move to be doing what she's doing at the moment, you know, but and she is smart enough to understand that, but also to continue to do it regardless of what it is. And so I do think that like when it comes to an issue like this, that there is, if the, once there is a complicity of silence around it and people are only getting one type of information or a small amount of information or whatever it might be, that maybe there's a greater responsibility for governments to be vocal about what it is that they do and don't think in these times because that is kind of, otherwise silence is compliance, right? Like it just says this is, we're happy with how things are at the moment. Yeah, it's not a good comedy topic, but
I've got a little, I've got a few little references.
You got a Gaza joke?
Well, I've got a few references to, in the show and I must say kind of, I was kind of, pleasantly surprised at how these sort of things dovetailed towards the end of the show because I mean I talk about the fact that this is an insane fortnight in 2023 in October. October the 7th is the attacks on Israel. Wednesday, October the 11th, we lost Cal Wilson, the nicest person ever, and then that Saturday on the 14th is when Australia voted no to the referendum, right? So again, this does not sound very funny, and tickets are available.
Yeah, I was going to say rule of three. That's fun. Bring some comedy back into it. A good bit of structure. Some global, some personal,
local,
some Australian. You know, it's really that's the whole. The whole show is just 1 week, bare naked ladies style.
Who's on the apps?
Yeah.
But yes, it was just like really bleak thing, and I still feel like I'm going crazy. The show is trying to say something about me feeling a little bit crazy, me feeling like that fortnight gave me the same feeling as 2016 when Trump comes back and Pauline Hanson comes back and Brexit happens, and you just this feeling that I had at least that I'm like, oh God, I don't know anything, and I don't know what most people are on about. I don't know what's going on in people's heads, and maybe actually the world's crueler than I previously suspected.
Yeah, it is.
So.
I mean, that's true. The world is crueler than you previously expected.
I guess so. I thought, but you know, is it the feeling of like, I thought we were all sort of all going in a certain direction.
Even then, when you thought that, it was only a small amount of people in a small amount of privileged places that thought that there was, for the majority of the world, like it's still a pretty
still brutal,
rough place to be living.
Mm. Comedy.com.au. God, I gotta get better at this. There's also a routine about me standing up to wipe my ass. So
okay, all right, okay, that's good. That's
you know, there's a bit of variety.
Is there a context to that, or just?
Well, I
without wanting to give anything away from the show, but we've told them all we've told them all the hard work that they're going to have to do while they're sitting there.
God, this Tom Ballard show, so many veggies.
Yeah.
So much medicine.
Yeah, where's the spoonful of sugar?
Well, I just tried to tell the story about my I was wearing AirPods and they when I was on the toilet listening to a podcast. Yeah. Someone said something funny on the podcast that made me laugh.
And the AirPod fell into the toilet.
And
now you've got a situation.
Yes.
Yes.
Situation. And I have to tell
Do you use that pun?
No, I think that's whose is that?
Situation. That's
Lizzie
someone
who.
Else's.
That is Lizzie
really?
who I directed this year.
Yeah.
Has amazing shit stories in her show.
Really?
Who's that girl? Definitely check it out.
Yeah.
And uses the term situation. So I'm sorry, Lizzie, I've stolen that from you. But in the course of telling this, I just had to say the fact that I stand up to wipe my ass, and I did not understand that that is not a conventional approach.
Oh, you, this is a for always thing that you do.
I always stand up to wipe my ass, yes. There are two... the look that you've given me.
All right, we're back.
I'm blowing your mind.
People have like stayed around long enough through your boring blah, 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 the world's unfair, but now we've got to some good stuff.
For the record, in the show, all this comes first, okay? Standing up to wipe your ass first and then we move
on. No, it'd be a weird transition for them anyway. Enough about the voice.
What else is going on?
I was wearing my earpods and I was listening to a podcast.
Yes, look, that look that you've given me is the core of the, like, I kept saying this on stage and people were like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Anecdotally,
yes.
What do you think the statistics are now that you're hearing from people, I imagine, who, like, you're there, this is their I am Spartacus moment.
Yes.
Like, you know.
This is blowing people's minds.
Yeah.
We are definitely the freaks. The standards are the freaks. Yeah. I reckon it's something like maybe 80-20, maybe 90-10. Most people are sitting.
I mean, it feels like you're spreading the problem around a little. Do you know what I mean? Like,
no, I'm giving a voice. I'm being a proud stander.
No,
I'm,
I mean just generally in the moment when you're standing up. Aren't you spreading the problem around a little? Like, is there not, like...
Yes, people think it's a bad technique.
I feel like it's bad technique. Because with women, there's like a direction you have to go in. Isn't there? Amy, that's right, isn't it? Like, that's correct. Like...
This is her job. She's at work right now.
Yeah, she's been enjoying it. She's been having fun. She's loving the stars bit. That's why I keep going back to it. I'm getting a good reaction from outside the window.
You're getting an audience. She'd be laughing at anything I say.
She has not laughed at anything that I've said in the months we've been working together. This is the first day. She loves me roasting you. Turns out that's her sense of humor.
Hey, fuck you, Amy. How about that?
Shit. She's a bit more confrontational. She's a landlord.
Oh, shit. Okay. Hey, solidarity. Class solidarity.
So
it's blowing people's minds. Yeah, and in Adelaide, I said, any standards? And a woman said, yes, I stand. And her boyfriend was like, what the fuck? And they'd been together a year and a half and they had no idea because couples don't discuss these things.
No.
And a guy in the Gold Coast said, I stand up to wipe. And
you stand before you've done any wiping? Or is it like a wipe, stand, wipe situation? I mean, that's a valid question. Don't know why you're laughing. Like, that's not the most
normal
question of all time.
No, I had a flashback to little 13-year-old Tom Ballard in Warrnambool watching the gala on TV, watching Will Anderson tell his jokes in his thongs. And if I could tell that guy one day... you're going to be discussing wiping your ass with that man.
Yeah.
I think he'd be very happy.
I mean, it's fine that way, but it's weird if I think of it that you're a 13-year-old and I'm a grown adult. That made it weird.
It'd be weird if on stage you're thinking...
How do you wipe your ass, son? Stand or sit? As long as you don't bloody kneel, I'm fine with you. Die on my feet. Wipe them ass. As you meant to.
We're back, everyone. Remember when we were crying about Gaza? It's all over.
Yeah, it's fine. It's
you
a journey.
Stand up. You finish your business. Yeah. You stand up. You get your paper, and you do
clean
your
while you're up.
Mm-hmm.
Are you squatting still?
You're squatting a little bit. Yes.
Yeah.
You're not at 90 degrees.
A full stand.
It's not like saluting the flag or listening to the last post. No.
Because otherwise, you clear it like you clinch it.
Yes,
there's access. It's an access issue.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then people who sit, they say, obviously, most people go behind to wipe. But then some dudes have said that they go front ways and move their genitals out of the way and then wipe that way. Isn't that insane?
Towards the front or towards the back? I love that you're now lashing out on other people who are doing normal sit-down stuff.
I'm just trying to understand.
And you're like,
hey, we're all human beings, man.
I mean, I think that for a guy, you're just getting the mess out of the way regardless. That's a real man clean-up situation, right? It's just like, oh, well, we're just going to clean it up. Whatever we need to do to clean it up is fine. It's interesting to stand. I've just never heard of that. Never heard of it. No one talks about it. Not just like, do I find it unusual that you do it?
Yes.
But the fact that I've literally
never heard of it.
This feels crazy. Was this a technique that your parents
taught you, because we were surely all standards.
Like in your family, are you all standards? Are the Ballard standards?
I haven't actually checked in with the rest of
them. You've got to check with the family. Because I want to know if this is something you've picked up at some
stage. I asked my mum. I said, Mum, when you wipe your ass, you said I will sit down. And she said, Tom, go back to uni. That's what she said. It's like, you've got to pivot. But it's great, like, because we've spent all this time on this, or do you scrunch and fold toilet paper bullshit? That's nothing, man. That's nothing. The real game is, do you stand up or sit down? And it's, some nights I've been doing this material and people will break up into discussion groups. They're like, the comedy, fuck this comedy show. I need to address this issue with my partner who's next to me. What the hell's going on here? So,
yeah.
I guess I'm tackling all the big issues.
I mean, that genuinely is super fascinating to me. So how do you feel about, as in, like, a person who cares about, you know, the planet and the environment and the future and the bloody greens and all that sort of stuff? How do you feel about recycled toilet paper? Like, are you...
Interesting.
Because this is where, like... Because once it starts to affect... Because I'm all for the environment. I really am. But I just... I'm not much for the recycled toilet paper.
What's the...
That's probably my one that... The two that I'm probably never getting across the line. I just cannot take my keep cup places. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Why not?
You know what? I've got a coffee machine and I just use that at home now.
Okay.
Because when I'm in public, I just cannot be carrying around that cup. I'm just leaving it somewhere. I've got a dirty cup.
Well, I told the story on Question Everything, which is also the first routine of the show about...
ABC darling, Tom Bella.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Unfunny comedian. finishing the coffee, drinking a coffee, keep cup and finishing and throwing it directly into a bin.
Yeah.
It's always fun. That's so weird. I've never picked you for a keep cup shame.
I know.
We get given so many keep cups in the course of this
show. I know. And I don't keep them, ironically. I'm...
Isn't who gives a crap? That's all recycled material, isn't it? Yeah. You can't deal with that?
No.
But you this know is, it's not... Hang is, on. You know it's is, not recycled toilet paper.
No, this is literally... I mean, I understand that. Sorry, the toilet paper made out of recycled materials. Sorry, I didn't use the correct terminology.
Well, no, I just wanted to make sure that you were aware.
You thought that I didn't know? I mean, I've been having a bit of fun with you for funny. Like, I've just been trying to be funny, but, like, I actually am a competent, intelligent human being who understands how recycling things work. That they don't get, that the things that are recycled don't need to be made back into the things they were previously.
All right, just so we're all on the same page.
All right. No, I mean the Airbnb or whatever it is, service department I'm staying in at the moment has who gives a crap, which is literally the reason that I have been thinking about this thing. It's too...
And you don't like it.
I'm more sensitive than others, I guess.
But shouldn't we all have bidets now? Like, isn't it crazy that we still have toilet paper? Shouldn't we all be on the Japanese?
I don't know. Is that better? Is that better for the environment?
I think so.
Isn't water a problem though? Like, what's better? You should know.
I should know.
This is your area.
Yeah, I got to figure out which technique
to cancel. Craig Rucastle. Let's see what we're doing wrong.
I'm sure you'd have an opinion.
I bet he would. I mean, the keep cup thing, I feel terrible about the whole keep cup thing. I loved COVID for that reason because, like, suddenly everyone was like, no, you're not allowed to use your keep cup again. I was like, oh, I'm back. This is the one upside of COVID. I'm not getting shame from my coffee cup.
Well, I guess in some ways COVID was really good for the environment, right? Like, emissions actually dip briefly for a period because people...
It showed when we shut all the things down. Yes. It turns out you can immediately shut them down and it can immediately make a difference.
Yes. And then Qantas started running flights to nowhere, whatever the fuck, we all lost their minds.
All right, so your show is called what? What's it called?
Good Point, Well Made.
How long have we been talking for, Amy?
Just an hour, as soon as you said that.
Oh, an hour. There you go. That's all right. That's nice.
How long has it felt like, though?
Yeah, I mean, the bit in the middle went real slow. Blah, blah, blah.
Can we add some laughs in that Israel Gaza bit? Like, can you just work in some canned laughter?
Just some really funny...
Just some laughs
from
MASH.
Just some funny stuff. Just some...
the show's called Good Boy Well Made. The special is called It Is I, and that's free
Where
to
can
watch.
People find it?
They can watch that on YouTube, on the 800-pound Gorilla Media, but if you just Google Tom Ballard, It Is I, or Tom Ballard special.
And if you keep watching it on YouTube, will you eventually get radicalized?
Yeah, I think
will
so.
Will videos come up that, you know... Will I go down a rabbit hole?
What's my algorithm?
Yeah, that's right. What's next?
I think everything just leads to Joe Rogan. I think that's just how the whole thing works, regardless of what you say. So Bill, check that out. And the podcast I do is called Serious Danger. And I think if people are into this or if they enjoyed this conversation, they'd probably like Serious Danger. Yeah.
Yes, it's a very good podcast, and I listen every week.
On it. Oh,
I like it very much. I think Emerald's very good too. You both make a lot of very sensible points. It's very entertaining.
Why are you angry, though?
I don't know. I'm not
How
really.
How many stars would you give it?
I got five stars.
Oh, shit.
Five stars, despite you dragging it down. I started with 7 for Emerald and then gave you 3 and then found it in between. Sweet 5. Tom Ballard, thank you so much for doing the show.
Thanks, Will. Cheers, mate.